So Parshat Shalach, two of the biggest enigmas, and by that I mean the strangest people of all of Tanakh, is Dathan and Aviram. Dathan and Aviram are the strangest people of all time. They appear basically twice in the Parsha, although they're behind the scenes all the time. You just don't realize that they're there. The first time we met them, they spoke Lashon Hara. They were Mosrim over to Paro, what Moshe Rabbeinu did. That was the first time we met them. They were the two fighters. You know, Dathan was being beaten up by the Mitzri because his wife was Shlomis by Zivri. She was raped by the Mitzri, and he wanted to get rid of them. So that happened. That was the first thing. Then afterward, they went and told Paro what he did. They were the ones using the shame of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. They tried to have Moshe killed. They left over the mun. They kept them. They went out looking for mun on Shabbos. They complained all the time about going back to Mitzrayim. They complained about the water. They complained about the mun and anything you think of. And then finally, Parshas Korach. And they were highly involved in the complaint against Moshe Rabbeinu and Aaron, highly involved in the whole idea of what was going on there. They were highly involved in Korach. But it's just, it seems strange. Like, so what happened here? Who are Dathan and Aviram? And then there's a pasuk, Perek Yud Dalet, pasuk Gimel. It says, "Va'amar Paro l'bnei Yisrael, nevuchim heim ba'aretz sagar lehem alibor." Paro said about Bnei Yisrael, they're confused in the land, sagar lehem alibor. The desert is really closed up on them. There's nothing that Bnei Yisrael is going to be able to do. They're done. They're done for. There's nothing they're going to be able to do. Yonasan ben Uziel, Atana, one of the Talmidim of Hillel HaZaken, his Pirush, whether it was actually written by Yonas ben Uziel, is a bit of a question. But Yonas ben Uziel says, "But Omar Paro livnei Yisrael to bnei Yisrael." Says Yonas ben Uziel, "Paro said to Dathan and Aviram, who remained in Mitzrayim and didn't leave when the rest of Klal Yisrael left. Everybody else left Mitzrayim, but Dathan and Aviram stayed. And Paro spoke to Dathan and Aviram and said, Nebuchad Yomaret Sagar Leham Amibor." That's who he was speaking to. He was speaking to Dathan and Aviram.
Just them two, or like there was that?
Just Dathan and Aviram. Just Dathan and Aviram. The question is, we all know what happened to those people who didn't want to leave Mitzrayim. 4/5 of Bnei Yisrael died during Choshech. We have the pasuk right over here: "Bacham Mushim Alu Bnei Yisrael Meretz Mitzrayim." 1/5 of Bnei Yisrael left Mitzrayim, and Rashi says in his Dover Acher that in Chamushim Olu Bnei Yisrael, that 1/5 of Bnei Yisrael left, he says that there were people who never wanted to leave Mitzrayim in the first place. Chamushim Echot Michamisha Yatzu V'Arba Cholakim Mesu B'Shloshim Yafelo. 4/5 of them died during the 3 days of darkness. 4/5 of them died. So who were the ones that died? The guys that didn't want to leave Mitzrayim. So how did Dathan and Aviram get to stay? How in Dathan and Aviram, if they didn't want to leave Mitzrayim in the first place, they should have died during Choshech. So how was it that they were able to stay? So I have 7 answers to this question.
How did they change their mind after Choshech?
So you can say they changed their mind. I didn't see that answer anywhere.
Why did
they die? That seems to be the strange. What?
That's the question.
Why didn't they die? That's exactly.
They changed their mind during Choshech, and they should have died.
Meaning because the Kurdish Baruch wouldn't know what was going to be at the very end? That they weren't going to leave?
What's the question we're asking?
And basically that is the... Yeah, I mean, let's go. We're going to have 7 answers altogether. Number one, I don't know where I saw this. I know this is in the notes of the Ramban somewhere, but there's so many different times where Dathan and Aviram are brought up, I don't know where exactly I got this from. But number one is, I heard that they were purposely kept around so that Moshe and Aaron would have adversaries. That HaKadosh Baruch Hu always wanted there to be people that were against Moshe and Aaron, so that Moshe and Aaron would not just be like an automatic, oh wow, there really is a God. There always has to be someone going up against the side of Kedusha. And Dathan and Aviram, what was that side that was there against the side of Kedusha? Because if everybody could just be proven that there's a God, well, there's no choice anymore. Then you lost Bechira. And there always has to be a Bechira. There always has to be a choice. So as much as you have something that's unbelievably Kadosh, you have to have somebody who is unbelievably Tamei. And that was Dathan and Aviram. So they were purposely there just to be adversaries and just to be around.
Just going back, though, to the beginning of that, how do we know that every single time there is some kind of controversy, that it is
Dathan and Aviram? Chazal say in Sota, anytime it says the word Nitzim or Nitzavim, it refers to Dathan and Aviram. So anytime that those two words appear, Nitzim or Nitzavim, anywhere throughout the Chumash, it always refers to Dathan and Aviram. So you'll find it around. You'll see it in all these different places. No, because they're dead by then. But Nitzim and Nitzavim, when it says you're going up against Moshe Rabbeinu, people stood in front of Moshe Rabbeinu, that was referring to Dathan and Aviram. There's a Gezerah Shavah that goes throughout. So here we go. We have a Moshe Zakenim. This Moshe Zakenim is in Parshas Korach. He brings down, this is an unbelievable answer, but it's a Rishon. Just remember, it's a Baal Tosfos. He says that Moshe Zakenim. He says that they were poor. They were poor. We know that they were poor. then we know they were poor. So if somebody's poor, what is that considered in the eyes of Chazal? As if they're dead. So they already were dead. So Choshech was only for those people who were alive, for them to now die. But Dasan Aviram were already considered like they were dead. Moshe Zakenim says it could be they also didn't have any children. They were already considered like they were dead, therefore they didn't die during Choshech. Now that's strange, because if all Bnei Yisrael were Avadim, they were all slaves, you'd have to assume that none of them had money.
Yeah, they're all poor.
Yes, and they're all poor, so what would that be? I'm sorry?
They got money during Choshech.
Yeah, they didn't get any money, they saw the money, but they didn't take it during Choshech, they got it later on. So it's just very, very strange. You're right, but it seems that they were all slaves, so you'd think they wouldn't have any money, so that's a very strange answer, but regardless, the Moshe Zakenim brings that down. He also brings down, this is answer number three, Moshe Zakenim brings down the only people who died during Choshech were those who believed that God had no power. That God had absolutely no power, there was nothing that God could do. But those people who believed that God had power, they just didn't think that God would do it, that was like dust and Aviram, those people didn't die. So the people that died were the people that didn't believe that God had the power. But if you believe that God had the power, you just didn't think that it was actually going to happen, that was Dasan Aviram, and they ended up surviving. They were there. Number four is a Shari Aron. Shari Aron says an unbelievable medrash. She brings down a medrash rabbah. She's not in the medrash rabbah. Says, all these people are making fun of Moshe and Aron. So a Kadosh Baruch Hu decided, you're making fun of Moshe and Aaron? I swear to you, none of you are going to make it out of Mitzrayim. And during Choshech, every person who ever made fun of Moshe and Aaron were killed. During that time, what do you think Moshe Rabbeinu was doing? He was watching 4/5 of Klal Yisrael dying. So Moshe Rabbeinu got up and davened to a Kadosh Baruch Hu and said, God, don't let them die because of me. I don't want these people gone just because of me. Let something else happen, but don't let them die because of me. And a Kadosh Baruch Hu said, Moshe Rabbeinu, I promise you, I'm doing the right thing here. I'm doing the right thing. But because you asked me for that, you davened for these people, I'll let two of them survive. Two of them will survive, and you're going to see that I was right and you were wrong. Who are those two people? Dasan and Aviram. Those two people that survived. So Dasan and Aviram purposely were kept alive in order to show Moshe Rabbeinu that it was better for them to have died in the first place. That's what it says. I got a Medrash Rabbah. I looked at the Medrash Rabbah. And this is my shot, but I think it works out well. Here's what the Medrash Rabbah says. I told you, I had stuff all over the place. Parsha Yud Dalet Halacha Gimel says, because there were poshim, there were sinners among the Jews that had a ptur from all the avoda in Mitzrayim. And they had a ton of riches, and they had honor. And those guys never wanted to leave. HaKadosh Baruch Hu said, if I kill them in public, then what's going to happen? Then the Mitzrayim are going to say, oh, they were all being killed at the same time. Therefore, what did he do? He brought in the Mitzrayim Choshech for 3 days. He brought them in Choshech for 3 days, and that's when all those people were killed, so none of the enemies would see, and everything would be all good. What the Pshat is? Dasan and Aviram were not among those people who were rich, because they were poor. The only people who died were the people who were extremely rich in Mitzrayim. Very similar to the Moshe Zakenim. It was those people who had power who never were involved in the Avoda of Mitzrayim. There were people, according to this Medrash Rabbah, who were involved in the Avoda of Mitzrayim, who were serving the entire time. But there were other people who were too rich, who never got involved in the Avoda of Mitzrayim. They weren't Avadim. They weren't Avadim. They were Patrunin. They were Pater from all the Avoda of Mitzrayim. This is a Medrash Rabbah in Parakim Gimel. You can look it up. But he said they were Pater from all the Avoda of Mitzrayim. They weren't there. Those people ended up dying because they never were Mishtatev. They never joined into the Tsarus that Bnei Yisrael had in Mitzrayim. They were never involved in that. But Dustin and Aviram, who we know were poor, because the Kadosh Baruch Hu told Moshe Rabbeinu when he was in Midian, don't worry, everybody who chased you before and now are dead. And Rashi says they became poor, Dasan and Aviram didn't have any money, they weren't involved in that, and everything was all good. So I gave that answer before I saw the Moshe Zakenim, but then I realized the Moshe Zakenim said something very similar, but it's all based on that Medrash Rabbah that says it straight out. The second to last answer is Edus B'Yosef. This Edus B'Yosef is good. The Edus B'Yosef says, everyone knew that Moshe Rabbeinu asked to leave for 3 days. Right? Everybody knew that. They went up to Paro, they said, we want to leave for 3 days in order to go have a yumtif in the Midbar. Everybody knew that. 3 days, that's all they wanted, right? The problem was that Moshe Rabbeinu told them, I want you guys to go ask for silver and gold. Go borrow some stuff, and then whatever it is, we're going to go out with it. The people were sitting there and they were saying, for 3 days, we don't want to have gold and silver and stuff. We don't want to have to go borrow from them. That's just a bother. Don't worry about all that. We'll go out. We're not going to ask for gold and everything. So Moshe Rabbeinu told them in private. And the Pasuk says, in Perek Yud Aleph, Pasuk Beis, Daber Nabel's Nea on, go speak to the ears of the people. Don't let it out. Don't let everyone know. You're not really leaving for 3 days. You're really leaving forever. But nobody was supposed to know that. It was only done in private in front of certain people. Because it was only done in private in front of certain people, and they told everyone, and everybody told one to the other, one to the other, and all of Bnei Yisrael started hearing, oh, we're really leaving, we're really leaving. They all went out, they got gold, they got silver, they got clothes, they got everything they needed, they took everything they needed. But Dustin and Aviram were never told about this. Because Dustin and Aviram spoke Lashon Hara. They were Mosers. They were never told that they were leaving forever. So Dustin and Aviram only thought that they were going for 3 days. So Dustin and Aviram, they wanted to leave Mitzrayim. But they thought, what's the point of leaving for 3 days? They figured, if we're leaving forever, then we would go with the Jews. That's why they didn't die during Choshech. But you're only leaving for 3 days. We don't want to leave for 3 days. We're only forever. So Dustin and Aviram didn't leave. That's why they weren't killed during Choshech. That's why they were still alive now. That's the Eidus Behoseth. You don't like that?
Well, the whole thing's insane. You're telling me that God performed 10 plagues, right? Brought down fire and brim and the Shemayim just to take them out for 3 days? Who in their right mind would believe that?
But you have
an idiot?
You have a pasuk. It says straight out four times.
I understand what the pasuk says. I understand.
No, clearly you don't.
The bigger problem is...
The punishments that the Mitzrayim were supposed to get did not allow, necessarily, for the Jews to become freed. That was something that Paro wasn't sure about. That wasn't something that even Moshe Rabbeinu could be sure about until he was told that they were leaving.
Why the whole lie?
No, that's another question.
No, that's what I'm saying. That's another issue.
Why did it 3 days? There are 7 answers to that question as well, and I can give it to you. But that's not...
Honestly, if I could care less what you do.
I could care less what you do. What a Kaddish Baruch Hu meant is a different story, and that's a long question. That's a different issue altogether, why he originally said 3 days. But he did. And that was the shot behind why Dustin Abiram thought they weren't going to be killed. That question I'm not answering. It has nothing to do with this. Then the Maral Diskin. Then we got answer number seven, and this is gonna take us to the end. The Maral Diskin says an absolutely unbelievable answer. You know, I'll tell you honestly, I always thought there was something that smelled Dustin Aviram. There is something that everyone missed about Dustin Aviram. How do I know that? Because the end of Parshas Shmos is the first time that Dustin Aviram makes it into Rashi. Doesn't even make it into Rashi. At the very end of the Parsha, Parsha Shmos, the people go straight to Paro. Moshe and Aaron go with a bunch of men. They go up to Paro. And Moshe Rabbeinu says, why are you giving them extra avodah? Why are you giving them so much more work to do? There's more straw that they have to make. They have to make the bricks. They have to do all this. Why are you giving them so much work? This is not what you should be doing. And Paro said, Nirpim atem nirpim. You guys are being lazy? I can't take this anymore. You guys are being too lazy. Get out of here. There were men standing outside the palace. Rashi says those men were the ones who were being beaten by the Mitzrayim. They were the shotrim, the officers who were Jewish, who were in charge of the other Jews, making sure that they did the work. And when the Jews didn't do the work, because it was impossible, they had to make bricks and then build up, and it was just impossible to do. When that was happening, and those shotrim were being beaten, they came out to Moshe Rabbeinu and they complained, and they said, this is crazy. It's absolutely crazy. What are you doing to us? They yelled at Moshe Rabbeinu. Says Rashi, those Jews who went up to Moshe Rabbeinu, who were beaten for Klal Yisrael, became Sanhedrin. They became Sanhedrin. When I first heard that, I said, but wait a second. It says the word Nitzavim by those people that stood waiting for Moshe Rabbeinu to come out from Paro. And Rashi says that was Dustin Vaviram, waiting to talk to Moshe, which means Dustin and Aviram were two of the Shotrim. That means they were beaten for the Jews, which means according to Rashi, Dustin and Aviram were part of Sanhedrin. I didn't know what to think. How in the world could Dustin and Aviram be part of Sanhedrin? I mean, to say that they were tzaddikim, okay, that's one thing. To say that they're one of the top 70 people in Klal Yisrael, to say they're in the top 70, there's something wrong with that. How could that possibly be that they would be in the Zakenim? How could that be? How would that possibly be? And then I found a sefer, the Vinitzdak Kodesh. The Vinitzdak Kodesh is written by a tzaddik who lived in Eretz Yisrael about 50 years ago. I found the sefer, and he said the exact same cheshbon, that there's something wrong about Dustin and Aviram. The Medrash says about them, they were roided b'ma'aber shanim, to be ma'aber the years, to be kovei chadashim. They were geniuses when it came to Torah. And they might have been on the Sanhedrin. They might have been the other 70, Elbed and Medad with the extra two. They might have been part of those 70. They were called kruei moed with a vav, an extra vav. In Parshas Korach, I'm sorry. There's something that we're missing. There's something that we're missing about Dustin Aviram. Now we have to figure out what it was. So here we go. Maral Diskin says, that's not pshat. That there were people that were moser nefesh for Klal Yisrael. There were people that got whipped for Klal Yisrael when they refused to do all the work. Those people who ended up getting whipped, they became Sanhedrin. They were rewarded in this world with becoming Sanhedrin. But there were other people. You know who the other people were? Dustin and Aviram. They were also beaten. But they didn't deserve to be part of Sanhedrin. Because they always argued on Moshe Rabbeinu. They didn't deserve to be part of Sanhedrin. So you know what they did? Instead of becoming part of Sanhedrin, they lived through Choshech. They were allowed to live through Choshech. The reward was not to die when all the other people that were like them died. That was the reward. They were allowed to live just a little bit further. And that Schus was so great, they were even able to see Kriyas Yamsuf. They were able to watch Kriyas Yamsuf happen, and they were able to see everything that was going on. That was such a huge thing. Do you understand, says the Chafetz Chaim, do you understand how big it is to be hit for another Jew? To allow yourself to be hit in order to save another Jew, in order to do something for another Jew? Doesn't it, you know, we're Rishoyim Gemurim. They deserve to die during Choshech. They never should have left Mitzrayim. And yet they got hit. And because of that, they lived. And because of that, they didn't die during Choshech. That's such an unbelievable line. Says Marl Diskin, that's where they went to. That's why Paro was talking to Dustin and Aviram. We haven't even touched this part yet. Paro talked to Dustin and Aviram. By Yomer, the way we understood it was, the Pasuk says, the Omar Paro lived Nei Yisrael. Paro talked to Dustin and Aviram. I mean, he spoke to Dustin and Aviram. What was he telling them? Paro was telling Dustin and Aviram, go to the Jews. Convince them to return to me. Go be that person that's going to be convincing them to come back. And that's why at Kriyas Yamsuf, right before the Yamsuf was split, they said out loud, Vayomru al Moshe, they said to Moshe, Mazos Asisolanu, what did you do to us? That was Dustin Aviram. Dustin Aviram were with Paro. Paro sent them ahead and said, go ahead, go make sure, go find out what the Jews are thinking. And they were the ones who were trying to convince. Every time there was somebody saying, let's go back to Mitzrayim, it was Dustin and Aviram through the word of Paro. And Paro never died. He didn't die in Kriyas Yamsuf, according to most Midrashim. He lived on further, which means he was still around, and there still may have been a connection between him and Dustin Aviram, trying to convince the Jews to be able to come back. According to the Maral Diskin, they did tshuva. The Kriyas Yamsuf made a roshim on them. When they saw the Kisei HaKavod, they realized there's something up. But every time later on, when they saw Moshe Rabbeinu do something, they just got angry. Who is Moshe Rabbeinu to tell me what to do? Who is this guy? Why should I listen to him? And they didn't believe that he was a pure Navi. They didn't believe some of the things that he said. Now I'm going to tell you one of the most unbelievable Midrashim I found out there. This Midrash is not a Midrash that we see in any of our Midrash Rabbah, Midrash Tanchuma. The Be'er Mayim Chaim, a Hasidish Sefer, brings it down. Dustin and Aviram had their own Kriyas Yamsuf, completely separate from the rest of Klal Yisrael. Klal Yisrael had their 12 splits with the 12 Shvatim. They went into the sea. The Mitzrayim were drowned and everything was all said and done. And then Dustin and Aviram went after the Mitzrayim were drowned and all the Jews were already singing Shira. Dustin and Aviram went in again. And there was another Kriyas Yamsuf and they survived it. They went right through the Yam, just like the rest of Klal Yisrael. Be'er Mayim Chaim brings it from a Medrash. But nobody knows who the Medrash is. No one brings down this Medrash aside from the Be'er Mayim Chaim. It's such a... How were they Zocha to that? How in the world were they Zocha to a Kriyas Yamsuf on their own? Without Klal Yisrael? Well, where's the schutz for such a thing? To have your own Kriyas Yamsuf, especially if they stayed in Mitzrayim. Why would they stay in Mitzrayim? What would be the point of such a thing? It's just an unbelievable Medrash. Where would that come from? What was the point of having such a Kriyas Yamsuf? So here's the pshat. Rav Wolfson says the following. There's a pasuk that we say in Tehillim, and we say it every Shabbos. Legozer Yamsuf Ligzarin Ki Lo'olam Chasu. Those who split the Yamsuf, Kadosh Baruch Hu cut it into different pieces, Ki Lo'olam Chasu, because God's chesed is forever. God's chesed is tremendous. It's the 13th pasuk in that Tehillim. Says Rav Wolfson, there's a remez here, because there was a 13th split. That 13th split was specifically for Dustin Vaviram. But why would a Kadosh Baruch Hu do that for him? And number two, you notice something else? From our paro, Rivnei Yisrael, Dustin Aviram, how do we call them in the pasuk? They're called Bnei Yisrael. Dustin Aviram ditched Bnei Yisrael. All of Bnei Yisrael left. Bnei Yisrael left Mitzrayim. If that Amar Paro lived Bnei Yisrael, how could the pasuk call them Bnei Yisrael? What did they do to deserve to be called Bnei Yisrael? They should be dead. They should be dead. Why would they be called Bnei Yisrael? What's the pshat behind that? Okay. To understand this, where Wolfson says, this is in Acharon Shel Pesach, this is where he says it, you have to understand something about what happened in Klal Yisrael. He says the following. He says, the Arizal and the Baal Shem Tov came around. The Arizal first, obviously, the Baal Shem Tov about 200 years later. What they started to do was be Megala. They started to reveal to people that those people in Tanakh that you thought were Rishayim aren't really Rishayim. They're really Tzadikim Gemurim. No one ever did that before them. The example that's always given is somebody like Korach. Everybody looks at Korach and they see a Rasha Gomer. So what a Rasha. How could Korach argue against Moshe Rabbeinu? They look at Zimri. They look at Zimri and they say, Zimri, oy vey, what did he do? He grabbed the woman, Cosby. He slept with her in front of all the other people. How could it be? How could Zimri do such a thing? I'm sorry? Zimri? Oh, Korach. I mean, but Zimri and Cosby, nobody, Zimri and Korach, nobody knows anything good about them until the Arizal came along. And then all of a sudden the Arizal came and the Arizal said, Korach, he had the highest neshama in all of Klal Yisrael. Korach, he could have become the Kohen Gadol. Korach, such God was from Korach. Zimri was Shlumiel ben Tzuri Shadoi. Zimri, he was always Machavim L'Shem Shamayim. Zimri had all these good thoughts, all these unbelievable things. Yeravam ben Nebat, he was really a tzaddik. But it only came in the times of the Arizal and the times of the Arizal and the Baal Shem Tov. What happened in the times of the Tanaim and Amorayim? Why aren't they Malamed Tzchus for these Rishayim? These people that look like they're Rishayim. Why did that only happen at their time and not before that? Here's what he says. He says the following. He says, what these Rishayim had was they had Neshamos that needed to be fixed up. So how were they fixed up? Through Gilgulim. They had to come back into this world and eventually a tikkun was made for them. Listen to this. Unbelievable pshat. He says, until they got a tikkun, until they were fixed up, they weren't allowed to be known as tzaddikim yet. They needed to be fully punished. They needed to be known as Rishayim. But as the years went on, and the Gilgulim were fulfilled, and their tikkunim happened, and they were fixed up, so to speak, they were given the tikkun that they were needed, then all of a sudden they were able to be known as Tzadikim Gemurim. Then their neshamas were fully fixed, and all of a sudden everything was all good. So by the times of the Arizal, when Korach was fixed up, you could say that Korach was the biggest tzaddik of all time. By the times of the Baal Shem Tov, when Zimri was fixed up, Chassid Shatorah will tell you Zimri was one of the greatest tzaddikim out there. But before then, you won't see it. So somebody comes up to you and says, I don't believe all that stuff. Korach and Zimri were really Rishayim. It's only the Baal Shem Tov, only the Arizal that went there and said such a thing. If you could Chas V'Shalom say such a thing, and you're like, just the Baal Shem Tov, just the Arizal said such a thing. You could tell them, there's a reason why. It's because the Rishonim, and those before the Rishonim, the Tanoim, the Amoraim, the Gaonim, the Saburaim, all those people from that time, it wasn't time to reveal to us yet the greatness of those people. It wasn't time for us yet. So the Gemara just goes through the Rishus, the bad things that they did. It doesn't go through the good things that they did.
I mean, they're still, for the most part, unless you bring out this idea, everybody here is pretty much further than the thing. Evil people. I mean, so they're still being punished.
You're right. There's still a punishment because they were written in the Torah that way. And in the Torah is Nitzchus, so there's nothing you can do. But the Arizal and the Baal Shem Tov are starting to reveal the secrets of the Torah. And starting to reveal the secrets of the Torah means you look in between the lines. And you look in between the lines and you realize Korach was not the way that Chazal depicted him. It's not that way. But what's the reason why they found it? Because by this time he had a tikkun. So the way that Chazal depicted him was, for sure, it was there. He was a Rasha at the time, but deep down inside, he had Kavanas L'Shem Shamayim. And that can only be seen later on, when you start figuring things out, when you start looking all the way behind. But says Rev Wolfson, nobody is Melamed Zchus on Dasan Vaavira. There is no one that ever has said anything good about Dasan Vaavira. It doesn't exist. There's no Chazal, there's no statement of the Hasidim, there's no statement of the Arizal. Nobody says anything about Dasan Vaavira. Even Yeshu, Osu Aish, the Rambam at the end of Hilchos Malachim, Perkir Aleph Halacha Dalet, although I'm not so sure exactly where it is, Rav Wolfson quotes it, but it says even Yeshu will have a tikkun after 50,000 yovels, it's called. I don't know what that's from exactly, but even Yeshu is supposed to have a tikkun at some point. There's going to be something that he'll be able to have a tikkun for. But Dasan Aviram? Nothing. It doesn't say anything about Dasan Aviram. It doesn't seem like anybody knows that there's a tikkun for Dasan Aviram. Why not? What happened to Dasan Aviram? Here's the pshat. They always argued with Moshe and Aaron. Here's the point. If a person is a kesher with a great big tzaddik, if a person is a kesher with a tzaddik, that means that you have the ability to be known as a great man. You could be a Rasha Gummer. But Lamaisa, he was close with the tzaddik. He was close with the gabbal. And just for that, there must be something good about that person. Because how could he be so close to that gabbal? There must be something good. Somebody could write about me years from now. Years from now. He was a Rasha Gummer. He did all terrible things. He gave in to his taivas. He did this and that and the other. But Lamaisa, I still have a connection with my Rebbe. And if my connection with the Rebbe is still there, I could still be looked at and people could still say about me, you know what, maybe there was something good. Because his Rebbe probably saw something good in him. So in his stomach, there is something good there. It's the exact same thing by every one of these Gedolim. Korach was still connected. He was still connected to someone. He still had some respect for Moshe Aaron. He argued. He said, I'm not sure. Could it be somebody else? But he still had some type of a connection. Very, very small connection. But that was Korach. Zimri was still connected to people. There was still some type of a connection. There was something that went together with them. So Sanhedrin of Yom had nothing. They always argued emotional. There was no connection whatsoever. So we can't find a tikkun for them. There's no way to pull them out. There's only one person who can pull them out. The greatest Melamed Tzchus of all time. And that's Mashiach. Says Rav Olson, until Mashiach comes, nobody will say anything good about Dustin Vavira. There won't be any Limud Tzchus. There won't be anything good about them. They'll be known as absolute Rishayim. And only then, after Bnei Yisrael crosses the Yamsuf, and the Egyptians are killed, and Esav is destroyed, and the Jews are brought back to Eretz Yisrael, and Mashiach ben David comes down, that's when Dustin Avirim will get their full tikkun. That's when Dustin Avirim will have, you'll look at the psukim again, and you'll say, oh, they're really tzaddikim and gemurim. But we're not privy to that information yet, because we're not great enough melam de zchus. Esav will never be mitaken. Esav never wanted to be fixed up.
Oh, but Esav, we always say, we do say good things about Esav.
Yeah,
Esav, we say good things about all the time. Esav has tons of schools.
At the end of the day, was Esav the greatest Baal Taiva that has ever existed? That's all you need to know. No matter how much Kibbutz Amy did, he was still the greatest Baal Taiva. And that's why his head, who had the potential to be the most unbelievable thing in the world, could be Amaris Machpelah, but his body couldn't make it. Because he gave into his taivas too much. That's not saying anything good about Esav. That's saying he's a Russian gummer. He gave into his taivas. He committed adultery. He was so pissed on him. He had a voter's heart, but that means nothing. If you have a good head and everything else is gone, you're a piece of garbage. Throw yourself out. Throw yourself out because you don't belong in this world. You've given them into everything.
But Dustin Avirim, yeah?
Dustin Avirim, there's something there that we're missing. We have no idea. We don't know what it is, but there's something behind it. But Esav will never get that. That's the pshat behind the Gemara Megillah. The Gemara Megillah says, who does son Baviram? That is Dustin Aviram, says the Gemara. Who does Ram? Mitzchilasan Nad Sofan, they were Rishayim. From the beginning of their lives till the end of their lives, they were always Rishayim. There was nothing you could do about them. But we have Psukim. I mean, it seems that they were on Sanhedrin, it seems that they were Ma'abar Chadash, what about all those things? No! They were Rishayim Gemara. Sure, they had heads. They had heads, but they never made it on Sanhedrin. And the first person who's able to be Melamed Tzchus on Dustin of Aviram will be Mashiach ben David. He will be the person that will come along and say, here's what the pshat in them was. Here's what they want to do. That's the first person that will come along and be able to do it for. That is a crazy pshat. That was a very crazy revulsion. It's a crazy revulsion just to understand what's going on in our generations. As time goes on, it's different. At the end of the parsha, a mullah comes along. You got to hear about a mullah. I mean, you can't go to a parsha. Moshe Rabbeinu tells Yoshua to fight. He says, Rashi, the reason why Yoshua has to fight is because he had koach ha-Torah. He had the ability. He had the ability to learn Torah. So Yoshua, you have to go fight a mullah. A mullah comes because we're feeding. They're reaping a diamond in Torah. They're so weak from Torah, they're not learning Torah. That's when a mullah comes. That's when Suffolk, the gematria of Amalek comes. It's because you're not learning Torah. So they brought in Yoshua. Yoshua, who had the Koach HaTorah, had to fight them. Question. Moshe Rabbeinu had more Torah. Why wouldn't Moshe Rabbeinu fight him? Moshe Rabbeinu should fight Amalek. But Moshe Rabbeinu should be out there in the war. If the whole reason why Yoshua was chosen was because he had the Koach HaTorah, Moshe Rabbeinu was greater. Why would it be any different? Says Rav Chaim Knievsky. Moshe's Torah was a different Torah. Moshe got his Torah not through Yigiyah, but through HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Yoshua sat in the tent day and night until he understood the Torah. day and night. Moshe Rabbeinu was tremendous, as we know. He had every bit of Torah that there possibly was to get, but he got it from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. At the end of the day, it was given as a gift to Moshe Rabbeinu. Even when he couldn't understand it, HaKadosh Baruch Hu put it in his head. When he said, God, I don't understand what it means to have a new moon, HaKadosh Baruch Hu pointed to him and said, that's what it's like. That's what it is. Whenever he had a kasha, he was shown a picture. That was Moshe Rabbeinu. There wasn't as much yigia. Yoshua was meyagea himself. He tired himself out. He sat in a tent day and night going over learning. That type of a person can defeat a Amalek. Because what's a Amalek all about? Calm down. Lean back. You don't really have to do it. You can just calm yourself down, have some chillin', drink some Coke, everything will be okay. As a rabbi in Rabbi Sussman said in Skokie Yeshiva about a year and a half ago, just sit back and relax with your chair back with some Dunkin' Donuts and a little coffee in your hand. And just learn Torah that way with your Gemara just sitting right there, sitting up there. And just lean back like that. That's not to be miyageya. That's miyageya. I hear you. But that's not miyageya. The Yegia B'Torah is owned by Yoshua. It's owned by Yoshua. And Yoshua, by far, there was no one like him. Only he could defeat Amalek. Only he could go up against Amalek. So here we go. Moshe Rabbeinu's hands went up in the air. Moshe Rabbeinu's hands went up in the air. It was like a roller coaster. Every time he had his hands up, that's when Bnei Yisrael was able to win. He put his hands down, immediately Amalek was able to win. What does that mean? So here's the pshat behind it. Says the Chofetz Chaim. Chofetz Chaim says, at the very end of his life, when he's extremely weak, and he couldn't really go anywhere, the Chofetz Chaim said, when there was something going on in Russia, when there was a decree, a gezeirah, or something bad going on, Chofetz Chaim always said, I'm going by myself. They said to him, why are you going by yourself? Take somebody with you. Take a guy who's just going to help you out, somebody who can speak for you. The Chofetz Chaim didn't speak fluent Russian. He lived in Russia, but he didn't speak fluent Russian. He spoke Yiddish. Chofetz Chaim said, absolutely not. He said, bring a translator. Bring him a Torgamah. Bring a guy with you who can translate for you, so at least you'll understand what they're saying to you. Chofetz Chaim said, no. Chofetz Chaim went by himself to the authorities in Russia when there was a gezeirah, whenever something happened. He would go by himself and speak to the Russian government. Whoever it was that he was speaking to, he'd speak in Yiddish. A little 4'10" guy who went in to speak to the authorities in Yiddish, a language that they barely knew. And for some reason, every time he went, the gezeirahs were taken off. Said the Chofetz Chaim, because the koach of Torah is so strong, proper Torah is so strong, your words are heard by anyone wherever you are. Wherever you are. But you need Yegiyah B'Torah. You know what the Chofetz Chaim was like? At the end of his life, you know how they sat in Radin? When they sat in the Beis Medrash, they only had benches. There were no backs to the benches. They only had wooden benches. And they all used to sit in these wooden benches in order to learn. So the Chofetz Chaim was extremely old. He was over 80 years old. So they brought him a comfortable chair. They brought him a little blue, powder blue chair. They put it underneath him. They said, sit on this. It's comfortable. You'll like it. You'll sit in it a little bit. It'll be all comfortable. I just noticed I'm sitting in a black chair. Either way, but you'll sit on it. Everything will be comfortable. Everything will be all good. Just sit in this and everything will be fine. Chofetz Chaim said, absolutely not. And he pointed to a pasuk at the end of the parsha. Ki yad al kisko. Because the hand of Amalek is on the throne of God. And he said the word kis should be the word kisei, throne, seat. But it's missing an aleph. Because God's kisei akavod is not full until Amalek is destroyed. Until Amalek is destroyed, my kisei can't be full. So he refused to sit in a chair with a back on it. He refused to sit on a bench that had a little cushion on it. He sat in a hard wooden bench through his 80s. So he would show people, Koach HaTorah is the only way to get rid of Amalek. And until that time, there's nothing. We're so weak. Look at us now. We're so weak. You go to a Beis Medrash in Eretz Yisrael where like all the seats are like made of wood, and you're just like, oh man, I can't sit here. You got to go buy like a little cushion, buy those little chair things and everything. We're so weak. We're just wimps. Chofetz Chaim, over 80 years old, he's sitting on a little wooden bench, sitting around there. He never used a chair's back. That's what it means to have Koach HaTorah. To end it off, there's a Maral Diskin. At the end of the parsha, it says that it doesn't say that Yoshua won the war. It says, Vayachalosh, that he weakened them. He weakened them. It says the Maral Diskin, it doesn't refer to weakening Amalek. It means that Yoshua himself had Chalishas Adas. Because Amalek wasn't fully destroyed. There were Amalekim that got away. And Yoshua got extremely upset at himself. And he said, my Koach HaTorah isn't there. I must not have enough Yigiyah. If I tried harder, then I would have been able to destroy Amalek. I just needed to try harder. And because I didn't try harder, I wasn't strong enough. I was too weak. I couldn't do it. And Amalek got away. Amalek got away, and it was my fault. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu went down to him and said, Yoshua, don't worry. I'll take care of them. I will erase the Zechar of Amalek. I'm going to have to get involved, because you're right. It's almost impossible for a human being to do it on his own. Yeshua had more koach and Torah than anybody else that has ever existed. There was no greater yegiah than Yeshua. Can you imagine how badly Moshe Rabbeinu probably wanted to give his kingdom over to his son, to Gershom, or to Eliezer, to say, my son should be the next king of Klal Yisrael, to be the next leader of Klal Yisrael, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu picked Yoshua. Yoshua, who was not the smartest person there. Kalev was above Yoshua. There were other people who were greater than Yoshua. But Yoshua was chosen. Why? Says the Medrash. Simply put, because he put the Sfarim back on the shelves after they stopped learning. He sat in the base Medrash day and night and didn't move. That Koach HaTorah still couldn't destroy Amalek. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu, because I have to get involved. I have to be involved here. It's an unbelievable line. But our Koach HaTorah has to grow. We have to do something a little bit more for Torah. We have to grow just a little bit further when it comes to this. You have to learn. And when you learn, try. Look inside and try. Because if you're being a wimp, then you're Amalek. Because that's exactly what Amalek does. He waits for you to weaken, and then he throws spekos into your head. Why am I doing this? What's the point? What in the world is going on here? That's where the spekos come in. Because we're wimps. Because we'll sit back, relax, and think a shir cannot be given without shalant. But I think we just proved that it did. Well, except for a little bit of raw shalant. We can't be weaklings. Stronger we are, the stronger we'll be against Amalek, and a Kaddish Baruch will come down and help us. We should be Zilka. Everything should be good, and we should be able to defeat the final Amalek. And it should be all good.